And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I am punchy today, sitting around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew as I try to recover from last night's Oscars. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comics for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do for the NPR
Among other things, I sit around NPR headquarters until 2:30 or 3:30 in the morning with you.
Because of the Oscars. That's the only reason. Stephen Thompson, what do you do for NPR?
I am an editor at NPR Music, where, blessedly, we have precious little to do with the Oscars.
That's true. That is very true. We did want to touch just briefly on the Oscars, partly because Trey and I are still attempting to recover. I'm just going to put this out there. Terrible. And I was an enthusiastic Hathaway Franco optimist. I thought that was a good idea.
We were going into this with high hopes for this host pairing, weren't we?
And their promos were very good, and they had good chemistry in the promos. It seemed like it was going to be really fun.
Well, I think one thing we need to keep in mind is we're taping this on Monday.
Right.
And by Friday, public opinion may have turned around.
It will have turned completely
people
around.
People will be like, you know what? I thought that James Franco's glassy-eyed charm was coupled with Anne Hathaway's terrified rabbit
enthusiasm
made for a treat. Yeah. That will...
I covered the whole thing in great and agonizing detail, and I would not add that much to what I have already said. It was dull. It was slow. Mm-hmm. It was completely free of surprises.
Yeah. Right.
Was it Sarah Bunting toward the end of the live blog who said it somehow managed to feel painfully slow and rushed toward the end at the same time?
Which is often the case with the Oscars. That's a problem they have repeatedly where they're just dragging through. Ordinarily, it would be like 9 Irving Thalberg winners and a salute to the movies.
We had that this year, did we not? We had salutes to Gone with the Wind and Bob Hope and Titanic.
But they were
a little shorter. Sometimes you get those, presumably to set up costume changes or something. Yeah. You get these, I will say, if I'm going to speak a few things in favor of the ceremony.
No.
I'm trying.
Fired.
I'm trying. These might strike you as grasping at straws. I did feel like there were fewer excruciating, like, long montages that had nothing to do with awards.
Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
They went back to including Oscar clips, the traditional, the nominees are so-and-so, and then you see some acting, and then so-and-so, and you see some acting. Instead of what seemed like an hour of kissing their asses.
Oh, it was awful.
Which was so excruciating to watch. It was like, who can forget Sandra Bullock's unforgettable... Sandra, you're the greatest.
They did a little bit of that.
There was a little bit of that, but not nearly as much as there were the last couple of years. They clearly tried to split the difference.
Instead of having 5 different people stand up there and one at a time salivate all over each nominee, that was a very, very welcome change.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
But all it was this was a part where it was less awful than it might have been.
I was going to say, on the other hand, Celine Dion.
No.
The other thing I enjoyed was the fact that because we had Sarah Bunting and Joe Reed live blogging with Linda Holmes, an NPR webpage contains the words, "Shut up, twonk," in reference to Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. Oh, we love a little Sorkin.
You know, Franco is getting taken out to the woodshed a little bit today, but I got to say he had the best moment of the night. It was nothing he said or did, but it was a look. After Melissa Leo delivered her deeply disingenuous, actorly sincerity bit, and
she's always surprised. It's like Taylor Swift.
Oh my God, that was painful to watch. And she decides that what she's going to do to make herself go down in my estimation even more is reach for Kirk Douglas's cane to do a little comedy bit as she's kind of hobbling off the stage.
Because he doesn't need that thing.
Because Melissa, he had a dude and a cane out there. He needed both those things. You can't just take the cane. Anyway, they cut away to the hosts, and this look of utter disdain is on Franco's face. And then I went back and watched a couple times because that was just like, he was emoting for all of us. Now, to be fair, he had that look on his face most of the evening. But that moment was
perfect.
That
was when it was applicable.
Yeah. She spent the evening looking up at him, smiling entreatingly into his face, yeah. laughing at every joke he didn't make, because he didn't make any jokes. And he spent the evening staring off into the horizon like the most dysfunctional couple you ever see out. When you see them at a party and you see that dynamic, you're like, oh, these
people. Maybe they were trying to reenact Blue Valentine.
Or something.
Anyway, so the Oscars, I think we felt, were very disappointing.
I was, for one, extremely excited to see, finally, somebody honoring Randy Newman.
Yeah.
I believe you were invoked there on the live blog.
That we love his endless songs about friendship. And in the spirit of friendship, we can all agree that we did not enjoy the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. And let it go at that.
And therefore, we are all friends. You know, speaking of friends, we do have a special show. Today we have a little bit of a theme show.
Yay!
And those of you who have listened to the podcast for a while know that one of our very most favorite people who has sat in on the podcast a couple times is Miss Barry Hardiman.
Yay!
Who unfortunately is not here today. We're not about to bring her out. I know that's going to be a disappointment to a lot of you. Part of the reason she is not here is that you may remember that Barry mentioned one of the times she was on the show previously that she was the pregnant lady.
That's right.
So, you know, these things have a way of progressing.
Turns out, this segment is going to be about where babies come from.
There is a miracle occurring atop your duodenum.
So we thought that we would take today as the time for this to all sort of peak in excitement level approaches.
To crown, even.
To crown. We wanted to spend our show today talking about things that we think kids should have, see, hear.
Encounter.
Read, encounter in their childhood. And
as it pertains to popular culture.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we're not just going to talk about love.
Exactly.
Yay. Love
safety. And as we do, it seemed inevitable once it was suggested. We are calling it a Barry special episode.
Yay.
It's a Barry special episode.
That was supposed to be a working title, people.
No, that is the title. So we're just going to basically go around and talk about some of the things that we think we would give to a kid from the pop culture universe. Stephen Thompson, you are the one who has actual children.
I do. I have two children.
So why don't you kick us off?
All right. General advice for those who want to set their kids on the proper path entertainment-wise, have a crazy uncle.
Oh, nice.
I had a crazy uncle, my beloved Uncle Paul, my dear mother who has been on this podcast, her brother. It's great to have a relative. Doesn't have to be an uncle. It can be crazy Aunt Linda, who certainly does serve this purpose for my children, who is there to expose your kids to weird pop culture. One of the many, many things that my awesome Uncle Paul got me into as a kid is old radio sketches. Old radio in general. My parents were also into it. I listened to the Jack Benny show on old radio shows just endlessly on these crappy cassettes that my uncle taped for us, I guess. Mm-hmm. And at the end of these Jack Benny shows, he would always throw on, because there would be room on these, you know, C60 cassettes, he would throw these little 60 to 90 second clips from the late 60s. They were produced by Mel Blanc for the radio, and they were voiced by actors named Joan Gerber and Byron Kane. There are several hundred of them.
After a dozen or so spinning lessons, the woodcutter's daughter told Rumpelstiltskin that she wanted to marry him and not the king. You see, boys and girls, she had always felt that older men were more attentive and understanding. So the beautiful young woodcutter's daughter married little old Rumpelstiltskin, became the sole beneficiary of his enormous insurance policy, and they lived happily ever after for about a month.
Genius.
There are several hundred of those. You can actually track those down. There are lots of websites where you can get old radio shows very, very easily. And it's absurdist humor. Mm-hmm. They're very short. They're very funny. Mm-hmm. Both my kids love them.
That explains so much about your sensibility.
So I recommend both The Story Lady and Awesome Uncles.
Oh, excellent. Crazy relative.
Going back to old-time radio, I mean, what kids get from that is a grounding in comedic structure, in timing. Mm. Because there are certain rules that don't change. Rule of threes.
Right.
And timing is eternal, and if you get it from something as sort of simple and clean as a nice old Jack Benny sketch, then you're set up for life.
Those are so funny. Those shows have aged wonderfully well. And, you know, with the exception of some of, like, the Rochester stuff.
Yes, that could be a little troubling.
But, I mean, there are bits on that that, you know, I fell in love with in the 1970s and 80s that were hilarious in the 40s that are still incredibly funny to this day. And one of the great things, of course, about sort of the way these things accumulate is all this old stuff is still there on top of a lot of great new stuff.
Excellent.
Kids are lucky.
Very good. Kids are lucky. Trey Graham, something for the young people.
All right. Now, Thompson said when he was setting this up that it was something that kids should encounter in the universe of pop culture, you know, as opposed, and you said, as opposed to Love and Vegetables. But we had a couple of people on the Facebook page over the last week or so ask that someone, I'm assuming they meant me, talk about opera.
No, I think they're referring to me.
Yes, it was you, Stephen Thompson. I'm not going to quite go to opera just yet, although I make no promises about what's going to happen before the show is over.
Sure.
I am going to start with classical music, but I'm going to argue that it's about as pop as classical music gets, and it's certainly as kid-friendly as classical music gets. This was the first thing I thought of last week when you guys suggested that we might do this. I am a gigantic fan of Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals. It's witty, light classical music. It's got crowing roosters and hee-haw jokes for the smaller children and the Stephen Thompsons among us. But it is musically sophisticated enough for adults. There are all sorts of fun musical in-jokes. There is one particularly famous one about tortoises.
In his next two visits, Saint-Saëns begins to make private musical jokes. And just so that you'll get them, I'll let you in on the secret. In the first one, he wants to describe turtles and tortoises. And what better way to poke fun at these slow-moving critters than to use the fastest music he can think of? So he borrows this racy can-can tune from Offenbach's opera, Orpheus in the Underworld. You all know that famous tune. Well, he takes it and simply slows it down to a stupefied crawl, and out crawl the turtles.
That's Leonard Bernstein, of course, in one of the recordings from his Young People's Concerts. I believe there are 9 DVDs of those. It's one of the most awesome things you could ever give a child if you think there is even a passing chance that they will appreciate classical music at some point in their life.
Spectacular.
Nice.
Oh, fun fact. Saint-Saëns thought that The Carnival of the Animals was a trite little piece, and he would not let it be published during his lifetime, except for one section called The Swan, which is just completely ravishing piece for cello, and sometimes played on the double bass.
Wow. Now, I haven't heard of this Saint-Saëns. I know of a Saint-Saëns.
Are they
in any way related?
They are. They are. That is the person we are discussing.
Very good.
It is just a good general rule to have music on in the house, classical music especially, just to give the kids a grounding. My parents never listened to any music, popular or classical, and so when I went to college, for example, and there was just people who knew what Brahms sounds like versus Beethoven, I just didn't have that.
It all just sounded like Warner Brothers cartoons.
Exactly. Right. Remains my one and only reference.
One quick classical music note. What do you think of Fantasia?
I think it's a terrific introduction to stuff for kids. You know, bits of it are a little scary, bits of it are energizing, bits of it are fun.
I talked to my mom before we recorded this to make sure I wasn't forgetting anything important, and she was like, putting Fantasia on in the background was a great way to introduce not only this vibrant animation and these characters, but to expose kids to this wonderful music, to kind of sneak a little bit of culture into.
Oh, absolutely. Like the Bugs Bunny What's Opera Doc.
Absolutely. Which is,
you know, there's no reason that you should anesthetize your children with Teletubbies when you can energize them with things like that.
Ah, so you're skipping to one of my big points.
Very good, very good. Glenn Weldon, something for the young people.
Sure. Well, I mean, we already talked about Looney Tunes cartoons. I think that's just a grounding. That's your basic building block.
It's a prerequisite. I mean, it almost goes without saying, but dear God, I mean, that's a humongous part of my childhood. Sorry.
I would add to that Jay Ward cartoons, especially Bullwinkle and Rocky. There's just something that sets a comedic template that you keep going back to for the rest of your life. There's something about that. But this thing that Mike is about to play should be as much a part of childhood as ice cream sandwiches.
Good morning, Pee-wee! Ready to assist you.
Good morning, Donkey.
What's today's secret word? Today's secret word is...
Stay!
Now, you all remember what to do whenever anybody says a secret word, right?
Scream!
That's right!
For the rest of the day, whenever anybody says a secret word...
Scream real loud!
That's Pee-wee's Playhouse, of course. Man, this show was silly, accessible for kids and for adults. And that's really what you want to look for, because that doesn't happen often. Having something that the kids can watch over and over again that the adults will not tear their hair out over.
Very good.
It works on two levels, but not in that kind of Shrek-y, pop culture-y way. Mm-hmm. It's just appealing to kids, and it's appealing to the kids in adults. It's timeless in a way because it has a very handmade quality. There's nothing cynical or ironic about it. The animation on the show, the show is wall-to-wall animation, is just fantastic. It's coming from a great place of stupid, silly fun. I will say that you can appreciate certainly the Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas specials on two levels, because it's got a Grace Jones number where she does Little Drummer Boy, and there's a scene where the playhouse is being added to, and the workers are straight out of the Village People. They're just these big shirtless construction workers. So that can work on two levels. But most of the show is just really just simple, pure fun.
On a somewhat similar note, very short-lived, but on DVD, The Weird Al Show.
Mm-hmm.
Weird Al Yankovic had a short-lived Saturday morning cartoon series that is delightfully fun.
Weird Al did a version of Colonel of the Animals.
There you go. Mm. See, bringing it full circle, people. Also, George of the Jungle, and particularly the Super Chicken segments.
Right.
Are so damn funny.
I will give you that.
If your kids don't fall out of their chairs watching Super Chicken, they...
Take them to the doctor.
They're certainly not my children.
Very good.
There's a lyric in the introduction to George of the Jungle, which I got wrong for years, and I maintain that when I got it right, it became less funny. Away he'll schlep with his elephant,
Shep while fella and Ursula stay in step.
With the help of his friend, an ape named Ape.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, for the longest time, I thought that was an ape named Dave. And I think an ape named Dave is funnier.
I agree.
Yes, indeed.
I agree.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Mine is also a DVD pick. I purchased this for myself only a couple of years ago. I do not have kids. I just personally wanted it and have enjoyed it a great deal.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
That is naturally the first ever episode of The Muppet Show, and the reasons why I love The Muppet Show are many and varied, as I think we will say about almost everything that we talk about today. It has lots of things in it that are still funny when you're an adult, but also I found it terribly, terribly funny as a kid. The DVD sets, you explore sort of the same way that there are people who are really good on Saturday Night Live that you wouldn't necessarily think they would be. There are people who are really great on The Muppet Show, where their interactions with Muppets and or on Sesame Street became, you know, big things for them, like Lena Horne, who had this intense relationship with Sesame Street and the Muppets.
I thought you were going to say Kermit.
It's not easy being green. Having to live each day the color of the leaves. When I think it would be so much nicer being red. Or yellow. Or gold. Or something much more colorful like that. No, it's not so easy being green.
they have this wonderful range of guest stars. Some of them are kind of forgotten people from the 70s where you think, oh, really?
Starsky and or Hutch.
Exactly. But others of them are really classic musicians, comedians, singers. The structure of that show, obviously, is that they're running a sort of a vaudeville stage show. It has a lot of that feel to it. It's very much a variety show. You have all the sort of little backstage bits and these recurring things that I think are consistently still really funny to watch now. I still love The Swedish Chef. Mm-hmm. I still love, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew. I still love Gonzo. I still think that's a spectacularly great show. And those little songs, like that little Menomina song, that's childhood to me.
Mm-hmm. My love affair with rock and roll began with Alice Cooper. I dressed as Alice Cooper for Halloween when I was 7.
He did Welcome to My Nightmare, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And they had a great sensibility like that. It wasn't too cautious about it. It was okay to have lots of different things. It was okay to assume that kids would watch lots of different kinds of music and different kinds of songs and different kinds of jokes. And I loved the fact that it had really good, clever wordplay jokes, but also just sort of funny. You know, the idea that clucking chickens are really funny and guys throwing fish is funny. And I love that kind of high-low mix of humor for kids. So I would say The Muppet Show on DVD.
Can I just go out on a limb here and say that I bet that Glenn Weldon and I are alike in that we probably both identified with Statler and Waldorf?
Well, I was going to go around the horn. I'll answer that in a second. But let's go around the horn. Favorite Muppet?
Oh, Glenda? Favorite Muppet. Rolf, the dog.
That's okay. Rolf, you and I are liking that.
Excellent.
I share your Rolf love. Stephen?
This is so twee, but Kermit.
Of course.
Yeah, well,
of
sure.
Of course it is.
Kermit. Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie Bear.
I do love Fozzie Bear,
very
too.
Very good.
I think I would say a cross between Fozzie and Kermit.
Yeah. Mike Katzeff, esteemed producer, favorite Muppet? Oh, you weren't even born.
I would say Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem.
Oh, for heaven's sake, yes.
The rock band with Animal, the saxophone player and the singer.
Oh, Animal.
Animal, yes.
Should have said Animal. And since,
also love the Swedish Chef as well.
And honestly, so who could think of a better and funnier name for a hypothetical band than Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem? That's hysterically funny.
That is
hysterically funny. And Animal was hysterically funny and Eat Drums. I never stop thinking that's funny. Love Dr. Teeth. And of course, while we're mentioning this, I should also say the Muppet movie, unlike lots of things that go from TV into movies, I personally think the Muppet movie is also a fantastic movie for kids.
Right.
Really funny, really odd, really cute songs.
New Muppet movie coming this November.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And let me just self-pimp on the blog. A few months back, I instituted a rating system for the best and worst of all of Muppetdom.
You rate things from
the nadir to the very top. The top being Rita Moreno and Animal doing Fever.
Oh, goodness. Yes. Oh, my.
The nadir, down at number one, or zero, actually, is Loretta Swit doing... I feel the earth move under my feet. There's a clip of it on the post, so we'll link to it. But
yes.
Oh my God.
We'll find it.
Have your eyes taken out and bathed in honey.
So that's mine. Muppets all around. Stephen Thompson.
Nice. All right. Again, as I said, I sat down with my mom, took some advice from her, sort of put it together with my own, and as I'm taking notes on my conversation with my mom, I distilled one of her pieces of advice into words that are very disturbing on my notepad. Quote, expose them when they're too young.
Oh, yes.
But this is great advice.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you apply it to pop culture. You may think your kids aren't ready for The Muppet Show, or The Simpsons is a little tricky because there are some more adult themes in The Simpsons. But my 10-year-old and my 7-year-old will just gorge on The Simpsons in 10-hour doses.
Yes, they will.
On weekends. And I say, great. Nothing wrong with it. I will sit there and enjoy it with them. There's absolutely...
Child Protective Services may disagree.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say this. It ties in with something that Trey said earlier, which is your kids don't have to watch the Teletubbies.
Right.
Your kids don't have to watch Barney. All the stuff that everyone dreads when they have kids. Oh, my God, it's going to suck that my kids are going to watch the Teletubbies or Barney. No, it's not, because they're not going to, because they don't have to. First of all, on TV all the time is really terrific. Kids programming.
Mm-hmm.
SpongeBob SquarePants, fantastic show. Phineas and Ferb, very funny. A lot of the Nickelodeon kid stuff that's being churned out right now is much wittier, much cleverer than the stuff that people think of when they think of bad TV programming. Kids' TV program is just like every other kind of programming. Some of it is great, some of it is terrible. Pick the stuff that you would enjoy, pick the stuff that you have enjoyed, and show that to your kids. Same goes with music. There has been this run of kind of indie rock artists who do kids' music, whether it's They Might Be Giants or just any number of them. You know, kindie music, they call it. Blah, barf. So there was a certain amount of sneering, like, oh, you have all these hipsters having kids and playing their kids Sufjan Stevens. Why not?
Yeah.
Play your kids good music.
Because they don't want to play them dumb
Motown.
Music.
Yeah.
Play your
kid isn't going to like a girl group?
Or show tunes, which I loved when I was a little kid. Or folk music, which my dad played for us a lot when I was a little kid. I listened to a lot of Pete Seeger and stuff like that.
Peter, Paul, and Mary,
my sister and I used to listen to Simon and Garfunkel, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. Mm-hmm. Every night when we went to bed, we would play it. This was, of course, the days of the LP. One of the sounds of my childhood is either myself or my sister, if we lasted through the whole first side, yelling out, turn the record over to my dad so he would come turn it over and play the other side.
You know, don't be afraid to jump the gun on this stuff a little bit. First of all, you'd be amazed at what they'll catch up with.
Right.
If stuff flies over their heads, they're not going to be like, Mom, Dad, I don't get it. They're just going to keep watching.
Well, and you and I have talked about the fact that we both were listening to Tom Lehrer records when we were like 8.
I can't believe I did not write down Tom Lehrer. Mm-hmm. Get the complete collected works of Tom Lehrer for your kids.
Great.
I have not gotten my kids into Tom Lehrer, and I can't, my God.
It's an oversight.
Yeah, speaking of Tom Lehrer, let's listen to one of Tom Lehrer's better known works. This is The Elements.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium.
So glad you mentioned Lehrer.
Yeah, so we love that. We love Elements. We love lots of that stuff.
The They Might Be Giants kids records are terrific.
Yeah,
they sound very much like They Might Be Giants' other records.
Yeah.
So it is not a gigantic leap between their kids' music and their music that adults love.
Very good. Trey Graham.
I like that we've sort of entered this area of leading kids along, showing them things that they may not be ready for. Because my next note is about something that I think might be more suitable for slightly older children when they're ready to grapple with darker ideas. It's not all dark. It ends happily. But it's Hansel and Gretel, the opera.
Spoiler!
It is, in some senses, the classic children's opera. Although my sense is that The Witch can be a little scary for some kids, the smaller kids especially. The reason I want to bring it up is that the music, which is by Engelbert Humperdinck, who is not the poor man's Tom Jones. He is the 19th century German composer. The music is just gorgeous.
I didn't know there were two
Engelbert Humperdincks.
And I'm not positive, but it may be that the singer took his name from the composer. I don't know that for sure. I may be making that up.
You think that's maybe what happened? You think that just Engelbert Humperdinck just exists twice? And the universe just generates Engelbert Humperdinck independently? Really?
I am sitting here waiting for the mockery to end.
Anyway,
keep waiting, buddy.
Anyway, it was the first complete opera broadcast from the Met in 1931 on Christmas Day. And the music really is beautiful. Some of opera's classiest singers have done this show, cheerfully sung this show. Christa Ludwig, Senna Jurnach, both played The Witch. And there are various recordings with Helen Donath, Lucia Popp, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, Risa Stevens, even Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, who is sort of the tweeest, most tidiest, most, you know, prim and prissy singer in the history of opera and art song.
I was going to say Elizabeth Schwarzkopf.
Maury Sendak designed a stage version that was co-produced by the Juilliard School and the Houston Grand Opera, and which was broadcast on PBS, so if you hunt, you can find it. It just goes on and on and on. At a minimum, you absolutely must have a recording of the evening prayer, which is a duet setting for the title characters of the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep prayer, and one of the great lullabies ever written for the human voice. I want to play you a bit of a recording of it that I particularly liked. That's Kathleen Battle on the soprano line, and Frederik von Stada, who for my money has the most beautifully grained classical voice of the 20th century, as Hansel. That is from a live recording of a Christmas concert at Carnegie Hall in 1992. Buy it, people.
I think opera is one of those things that needs to get its hooks in you very early. I think there's a window of opportunity because, I think my window is shut. that did nothing for me. But
it's like they say in Pretty Woman, either you get it the first time or you never will. But play them the lullaby and they might get it.
Glenn Weldon, something for the children.
You know, you can try to get kids interested in comics. Lord knows I tried with my nephews. They turned out to be kind of kids who like the out of doors, so it didn't really take. But the thing to keep in mind is that there's some great comics for kids out there, not superhero comics necessarily, mm-hmm. but some great comics for kids. There's a series called Owly, O-W-L-Y, which is a wordless comic that is just adorable, hard to find perhaps, but if you have a really good library, I'm sure they can hook you up. There is also a great site with a very sensible name of goodcomicsforkids.com. Every week they just kind of review some of the releases that are coming out that week, so there's a lot of stuff out there that you can really get your kids turned on to, theoretically. Doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. What worked with my nephews was not a comic, but a book series by Dave, or Dav, D-A-V is how you spell it, a book series by Dav Pilkey called Captain Underpants.
Yes, my kids love those.
These are chapter books, I suppose. What would you call them? Chapter books. There's an illustration on every page. Which are just so fun and so funny. And they kind of tweak some of the superhero conventions and really talk about school in a really funny way. So the Captain Underpants series is a big recommendation for me.
Excellent. Well, we have talked a lot about fun things, enjoyable things, enriching things. But every once in a while, you have to do actual educational things.
Boo.
No,
things
boo.
With learning.
When Reginald was home with flu, the doctor knew just what to do. He cured the infection with one small injection, while Reginald uttered some interjections.
Hey, that's smart! Ouch, that hurts! Yeah, that's not fair, giving a guy a shot down there!
Interjections,
hey!
That, of course, is the song Interjections from the Schoolhouse Rock series, which when I was a child, they ran between Saturday morning cartoons. And unfortunately, I think that's a thing of the past. But now they are available on DVD, and you have to sort of go out and get them. And unfortunately, I think that sort of results in people watching them all at once.
Yeah.
It's not quite as perfect of a way to see them, I think, because I think the way that we grew up seeing them is the perfect way to see them. But they're just little animated cartoons with these fantastic songs, which are in many cases shockingly informative.
Yes, mm-hmm. To this day.
And
yes.
Actually, I mean,
I know the preamble?
Anybody know the preamble to the Constitution?
Everybody knows the preamble to the Constitution because of a Schoolhouse Rock song. I frequently, if I am counting by threes, mm-hmm. I realize that mm-hmm. I am hearing the 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30. So does Trey. And I will say, as somebody who used to work as a legislative staffer in a legislative body, the I'm Just a Bill song is a remarkably accurate and sophisticated explanation of what goes on, mm-hmm. theoretically, the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
For something that's 3 minutes long, there's a tremendous amount there. But the grammar ones, I think, in some ways, I have the softest spot for the grammar ones. Mm-hmm. The interjections one that I just played, the adjectives is great.
Mm-hmm.
The
lolly,
noun
lolly,
is a lolly, lolly, get your adverbs here. And, of course, conjunction, junction, which is one of the most mm-hmm. famous ones. And conjunction, junction is a great example of how the way that they visualized conjunctions as train cars linking things together is really the only way I ever understood what a conjunction was. Even after I became a writer, it was sort of, that still is really my visual for how conjunctions operate, and the fact that they are and but nor, and that's what those words are. But they're really, really fun, and I don't know that I've ever seen anything that balances any more efficiently so much information, so much entertainment, and so much energy and memorability, that those things will kind of stick with you over time.
Note for the record, One of the lyricists who worked on that series, Lynn Ahrens, the woman who was also behind Ragtime, Once on This Island, The Seussical, things like that. Broadway mm-hmm. for the win.
Mm-hmm. Broadway for the win.
I'm willing to bet that the year after Schoolhouse Rock was taken off of ABC, test scores dropped.
Yeah.
America.
I'm willing to bet.
I know
America
got,
if you America got 3%
preamble.
Stupider.
I know I got dumber.
Definitely. Because it's exactly that. It's not seeing them all at once. It's seeing them every week over and over and over again mm-hmm. between Thundar the Barbarian mm-hmm. and something else again.
Yeah, absolutely. And kids, I think, will still get a kick out of them. If you, for some reason, have not experienced them, please do experience them. Stephen Thompson, you are up.
All right. Stay up on new technology. This is a good piece of advice in general anyway, but my nephew is learning how to animate because my sister bought him an iPad. Mm-hmm. My kids have been doing little animation games on their Nintendo DSIs. Uh-huh. There are surprisingly educational and useful ways for kids to learn how to do creative things using the technology. A piece of equipment that I think no parent should be without is a little handheld voice recorder mm-hmm. that makes MP3s. Huh. You can make your own books on tape for your kids. Giving your kids recordings of yourself, as I have learned by doing a weekly podcast about popular culture, is a great way to bond and connect with your kids in ways that they will be happy to be able to take with them someday. Uh-huh. The fact that I have old audio cassettes of my grandmother uh-huh. reading Walt Kelly comics and other great children's materials. My grandmother is gone now, and having that as a little something to remember her by is a wonderful treat that I can pass along to generations that will never get to meet her. Not to over-schmoopify, but you know, definitely take the time to read children's books, not only to your kids, but into a tape recorder so that you may play them later. Children's books that I recommend, Mog the Forgetful Cat, Lily's Big Day, all the Lily books. Lily is a precocious little mouse. And I've recently taken to reading the Lily books to my daughter Grace, happy birthday Grace, in a growly monster voice.
Nice.
Perfect.
Which she thinks is hilarious.
That sounds like something you would do. Very good. Trey Graham.
I'm going to stick stubbornly to my theme. Once your children are a little older and they are ready for more adventurous classical music, particularly opera, The Cunning Little Vixen. It's kind of the Bambi of the operatic repertoire. It's about making friends and taking risks and coming of age. But like Bambi, and in a more sophisticated way than things like The Lion King, it is also about our old friend, the Circle of Life. Spoiler alert, the title character has many adventures and has an excellent life, but she dies tragically.
Oh, jeez.
It is considered one of the lighter operas of Leos Janáček.
Perfect for kids.
Of course.
Yes, just so you know. Also, if all of this opera stuff is not doing anything for you, but you would like a musical recommendation to put in front of your children, the first act of Sondheim's Into the Woods.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. If I say Peter and the Wolf, is that...
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. I would say Peter and the Wolf, too, for classical things, because I know we had a record of that when I was a kid.
Yeah, if you can track down the record where Basil Rathbone is the narrator, mm-hmm. that particular recording we wore out.
We had a recording where the Sorcerer's Apprentice was on one side and Peter and the Wolf was on the other side, and we listened to that quite a lot.
It's worth noting, too, that we've talked about recordings, but if you were in any mid-size American city where there is a symphony orchestra within driving distance,
right.
there's a good chance that somebody is going to be performing
right.
this live near
right.
you,
right.
and the kids, they'll have orchestra petting zoos. Mm-hmm. The kids can go and meet mm-hmm. the musicians and touch the instruments and make noises. If you're raising a child and you haven't given them the opportunity to spark to this stuff, do it at least once, please.
Excellent. Excellent point. Totally agree. Glenn Weldon.
More books. I tend to give people who are having babies a copy of books that I loved as a kid because it's all about me, let's be honest. Even if that means having to track them down because they're out of print. One thing that never goes out of print are the Encyclopedia Brown books.
Absolutely.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Great, Donald J. Yes. Sobel. I mean, I identified with Encyclopedia Brown in a minor way. And what I loved about those books is that in every one of them, the first two or three pages are exactly the same because he's scene setting, and it's uh-huh. about the dad and the mom and how he closes his eyes at the dinner table. Uh-huh. So it's just fantastic. There was a series in the 70s of books, and you were going to titter at the name. The series was called Something Queer Is Going On.
Yes, we did.
Shut it.
You set it up.
I know.
Come on, a couple of us preemptively tittered at the word titter.
Yeah. This was a great series of books by Elizabeth Levy and illustrated by Mordecai Gerstein, who's gone on to win a lot of awards. It's just these fantastic mystery stories about this girl, Jill, and her friend, Gwen, and they have a dog, a basset hound named Fletcher. And the great thing about it is that there are all these illustrations with maps and arrows and all. Just, it's really striking stuff that I really remember. The book that I just gave somebody, it's called Andrew Henry's Meadow by Doris Byrne. It's a story of a kid who is kind of a inventor, a lot of Rube Goldberg devices around his house, and his mom kicks him out and says, go outside and play. So he goes and finds a meadow where he builds a house for himself. One by one, the children of the neighborhood come, and they each have these little hobbies that they want him to build a house for them. Looking back on it now, it's about being a nerd, having hobbies, and finding a place where you can be that nerd.
I'm going to pick up on your book thing just for a second. I do have one other thing, but book-wise, I would not end this podcast without mentioning Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. One of my favorite books, and a book the theme of which I still call upon to this day.
Yes.
And in this book, what happens, if you're not familiar with it, Alexander explains all the terrible things that happen to him all day long. Everywhere he goes, it just seems like the world is kind of out to get him, and he can't get what he wants, and they don't have the sneakers that he wants, and he keeps spilling things, and there's kissing on TV. I hate kissing.
Lima beans for dinner, and I hate lime.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is a wonderful, wonderful book. And what I love about this book is that he keeps saying throughout the day, I think I'll move to Australia, because that's his answer to the misery and unhappiness of his own life, is I'm going to move to Australia. And the part of this book that I love is that his mother comes at the end of the day and they talk, and he tells her how he feels. He tells her how he's had this terrible day. And she tells him, rather than trying to talk him out of being unhappy or whatever, she winds up saying to him, some days are like that. Even in Australia. And so it is a great theme that I come back to again and again and again, that if you feel like you've had a horrible day, the truth of the matter is some days are like that, even in Australia. Wonderful book.
I read it to my kids all the time.
Wonderful book, and a classic, again, never goes out of style. Now, Stephen mentioned before about indie bands that make music for adults, but then also make music for kids. There are also folk musicians, as I mentioned before, who also will sometimes put out kids' records. But I'm going to have Mike play something from one that I really, really, truly love, which is the group Sweet Honey and the Rock, which is an a cappella group of African-American women. And they've done a bunch of records of different kinds, but they also have several really fabulous children's records, which go everywhere from sort of just little rounds that they sing to more elaborate stuff. And this is something from one of those.
Bring me little water, Sylvie. Bring me little water now. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Bring me little water now. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while.
So that's what that sounds like. Very, very rich harmony. That particular cut is from an album called All for Freedom. They also have one called I Got Shoes. As I said, it goes from little kid songs like Deep Blue Sea, which is sort of an easy folk song to sing, to kind of counting songs and folk songs and great stuff. So love that one. Highly recommend.
They're great.
Any of the Sweet Honey kids record.
This show is going to cost people so much money.
So, of course, we hope that you will come to our Facebook page. You can search for Pop Culture Happy Hour on Facebook. Come to our Facebook page or comment on the blog at Monkey C and tell us the stuff that you think kids should have, the stuff that you think that they just cannot live without, that you would recommend to anyone who has kids. So even though you are used to having us close out with what's making us happy this week, we are going to save our space for cramming in as many of the recommendations that we have just given as we can, and just tell you that what is making us happy this week is the opportunity to share all this amazing, wonderful stuff, and also, of course, to wish best wishes.
Yay.
And happiness and joy to Barry.
What could make us
happy? Here.
That's what's making me happy anyway.
Absolutely. I mean,
she's one of those George Bailey people who I think if anything bad ever happened, you would find 100 people lining up to give over their divorce money if they ever had a husband. So that is what's making us happy this week. Now, this would normally be the part of the show where I would give out our Twitter handles, and I just wanted to mention that we did have a little controversy last week. Stephen did not sing Trey's little song. This caused a certain amount of consternation. You know, we've been trying to figure out whether there's any sort of solution to this problem.
Wait, what part of consternation is thank you, thank you, thank God himself?
Other people did experience consternation, though. This is a problem that we've been trying to solve. Mike Katzef, do you think we have a solution to this problem?
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
You're kidding.
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
I think I have to hear that one more time.
Oh, Trey God. With an E, then Graham like the cracker.
So, a while ago here on the podcast, and I just want to tell everyone that nobody knew that was coming except for me and Mike. And a while ago on the podcast, we mentioned that we would love to see a barbershop version of that. That came into us from our Department of Making Our Dreams Come True, which means it came from Steven's mother.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Oh, my God. Thank you, Maggie.
That recording came from a group called Regal Blend, which is a barbershop quartet from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, whose members are Joe Larson on lead, Norm Barnard on baritone, Ron Moe on bass, and Brent Frankenhoff.
Oh, really? Now, it should be noted that Brent Frankenhoff is married to Kim Frankenhoff, who
cross-stitched
our Facebook icon, which is the cross the Whitman sampler style. This is beneath NPR's dignity.
Wow, this is a very tiny but very active fan base. Yes, indeed. Six people.
So apparently Maggie decided to reach out and see if she could make our dream
all she
of
did,
a barbershop.
All she did was deploy the emergency Frankenhoff the way we deploy the emergency Katzef.
It's true.
I would just like to say, Maggie, I don't know if you even knew, but it's only 2 days past my birthday, so thank you very much.
And happy birthday to Trey.
And that's just maybe the coolest thing ever, I think. I personally think. So now that we have heard it in the best possible way, I think...
We can retire.
We can dispense with it forever.
We can retire it and live happy forever.
Yes, indeed.
But you can follow all of us on Twitter, for real. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. That's Weldon. You could follow Trey at Trey Graham. It is Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker.
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's Stephen. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katzef, at Mike Katzef. That's Katzif. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which maybe you are finally listening to as we wind down. Thanks to all of you guys for being here, as always.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for coming, and good luck to all of you with kids or new kids or about to have kids, and we will see you next week.